Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the Voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Education Report and the Making of a Nation, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz in Washington. Today on the program, we report on a decision by the United States to closely observe the situation in the South China Sea.
And I stress the importance of everybody clarifying claims under international law and proceeding under the legal process through the law, through arbitration, and also through bilateral relationships.
And we report on the 80th anniversary of the opening of Alcatraz to civilian prisoners. Then we look back at a law that has been called the most important social legislation in the United States in the 20th century. It was signed into law on this day in 1935. Those are our stories today on As It Is. The United States says it will closely observe the situation in the South China Sea to ensure steps are being taken to reduce tensions in the area. Ana Mateo reports.
The State Department released a statement one day after China dismissed a call by the U.S. for China to stop taking actions that it believes could increase tensions. The U.S. made the proposal at a meeting of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN. Secretary of State John Kerry called on ASEAN countries to manage territorial disputes based on international law. He said he is hopeful that tensions can be ended.
We all underscored the importance of negotiations on a binding code of conduct. And I stress the importance of everybody clarifying claims under international law and proceeding under the legal process through the law, through arbitration, and also through bilateral relationships.
China and some Southeast Asian nations were not happy about the U.S. statement. China said by supporting countries like the Philippines and Vietnam, the U.S. was making the situation worse. Efforts by the United States and the Philippines to persuade ASEAN members to support a temporary halt to oil drilling in disputed waters were unsuccessful. China said the U.S. was using the issue to interfere in the area. In May, tensions in the South China Sea area rose sharply when China placed a huge oil drilling rig in waters claimed by Vietnam. Disagreement over the disputed sea has divided ASEAN. Several members have made territorial claims in the South China Sea, but they do not want to anger China. In the past, China has been able to use its influence to block action on territorial issues. For example, talks ended without agreement when Cambodia chaired the ASEAN meeting in 2012. Cambodia is an ally of China. I'm Ana Mateo.
You are listening to As It Is on the Voice of America. In 1934, U.S. officials wondered where to put the country's most dangerous prisoners. They found a place on an island in the harbor of the city of San Francisco, California. It was officially called Alcatraz Federal Penitentiary, but everyone called it The Rock. The prison began accepting civilian prisoners 80 years ago this week. Alcatraz was a military prison from the late 1850s until the 1930s, when the first group of federal prisoners arrived on August 11, 1934, The Rock opened for business. The prisoners were considered the country's worst criminals. They included murderers, bank robbers, and kidnappers. One of the main reasons federal officials chose Alcatraz Island to detain these prisoners was because they thought it would be impossible for the prisoners to escape. Cold, deep, and dangerous waters surround the island. Also, the distance between the island and San Francisco is too far for most humans to swim. No prisoner was ever officially reported to have successfully escaped. However, in 1962, three men broke out of the prison. Each man worked very hard at night for many months to cut through the stone wall of his cell. They made false heads out of paper, paint, and hair. On the night of June 11th, the men placed the heads in their beds to make it look as if they were sleeping. Then the prisoners escaped through the holes in their cells to get to the water. The men were never seen or heard from again. It is believed that they drowned while trying to swim to San Francisco. The prison closed in 1963 because of the high cost of keeping prisoners there and the need for major repairs. The last prisoners were moved to other cells. In 1972, the United States Congress passed a bill creating the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. Alcatraz Island and the old prison are part of this area. Each year, more than 1 million people visit Alcatraz to see the prisoners' cells and listen to stories about the jail's history. But unlike the prisoners who once lived there, visitors can escape from the prison whenever they want and return back across the harbor to San Francisco. Today, the U.S. government houses the country's most dangerous criminals in a supermax prison at Florence, Colorado. Its unofficial name is Alcatraz of the Rockies. On August 14, 1935, President Franklin Roosevelt signed the Social Security Act into law. He was keeping a campaign promise to help Americans deal with the financial hardships of the Great Depression, which had made life especially difficult for older rural workers with few skills. The Social Security law meant people who were old or handicapped would be cared for. The program was to be paid for by a tax on workers' pay, as it still is today. Social Security is now mostly a program that makes payments to retired people. But the program also continues to make payments to people who cannot help themselves. The Social Security law has been called the most important social legislation in the United States in the 20th century. That's our program for today. I'm Christopher Cruz, reporting from the VOA Learning English headquarters in Washington. We will be back tomorrow with another edition of As It Is. I hope you'll join us then, here on the Voice of America.
The Education Report is next, followed by The Making of a Nation. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Education Report. In some ways, the high school girls at the Pretoria Hospital School seem like many other girls their age, but there is a major difference. Most of them will become mothers by the end of this year. South African researchers say about 30% of girls in the country become pregnant by the time they are 19 years old. Only 1/3 of these girls stay in school while they are pregnant or after their babies are born. The Pretoria Hospital School is the only school in South Africa with a special division for pregnant girls. 100 pregnant girls are currently taking classes there. Most were forced to leave traditional schools because of people's treatment of them.
I thought they would judge me, and that's why I left. When I was at grade 9, there was a girl in grade 10 who got pregnant. When we walk through the halls, the girls would go like, look, she was pregnant. So that's why I also didn't want to stay, because I know what the people think, and they judge easily.
Sometimes South African schools expel pregnant girls, although the action violates the law. Many pregnant teenagers never finish their secondary education. More than 30% of students leave high school without finishing because of pregnancy. Dorothy came close to being in that group. She was expelled from school when she got pregnant. She spent months at home searching for another school that would accept her. She arrived at Pretoria Hospital School earlier this year and praises the environment.
I began to feel welcome and not discriminated against, and it was lovely because we could all share about the same thing. No one was going to judge you. They are all mothers. We share the same pain, the same joys. And yes, teachers don't constantly tell us about what a bad deed we did, and they support us.
School principal Rina van Niekerk says it is most important to raise every student to the correct educational level and keep them there.
There's no cutoff date for them to enroll at our school. So you will find that learners land up with you in the third term of the year, but they're behind the work schedule that we are following. So you need to get those girls on par with the rest of the girls. Another challenge that we have is high absenteeism rates amongst the girls.
She noted that the girls also often miss school because of health problems linked to pregnancy. Pretoria Hospital School opened the program for pregnant teenagers in the middle 1980s. It remains the only such school in South Africa. And that's the VOA Learning English Education Report. I'm Jerry Watson. And now, here's words in the news from this story. Poverty, lack of enough money to provide for life's basic needs, including shelter and food. Major, very important, large in number, amount or extent, very serious or bad.
Thank you. Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In the summer of 1858, two candidates campaigned across the state of Illinois for a seat in the United States Senate. That seat belonged to Stephen Douglas from the Democratic Party. He was seeking re-election. His opponent was a lawyer from the newly established Republican Party. His name was Abraham Lincoln. This week in our series, Frank Oliver and Larry West tell us about this campaign of statewide, but also national importance.
Abraham Lincoln proposed that he and Stephen Douglas hold several debates. The rules for each debate would be the same. One man would speak for an hour. His opponent would speak for an hour and a half. Then the first man would speak for half an hour to close the debate. Douglas agreed. There were seven debates in all. They were held in towns throughout Illinois. In some places, there was great interest in what the two candidates had to say. Thousands of people attended. Douglas was a short, heavy man. One reporter said he looked like a fierce bulldog. Douglas' friends and supporters called him the little giant. Lincoln was just the opposite. He was very tall and thin, with long arms and legs. His clothes did not fit well, and he had a plain face, one which many thought was ugly. He looked more like a simple farmer than a candidate for the United States Senate.
The Lincoln-Douglas debates covered party politics and the future of the nation. But everything the two men discussed was tied to one issue, slavery. Douglas spoke first at the first debate. He questioned a statement made in one of Lincoln's campaign speeches. Lincoln had said that the United States could not continue to permit slavery in some areas while banning it in others. He said the Union could not stand so divided. It must either permit slavery everywhere or nowhere. Douglas did not agree. He noted that the country had been half slave and half free for 70 years. Why then, he asked, should it not continue to exist that way? The United States was a big country. What was best for one part might not be best for another.
Then Douglas questioned Lincoln's statement on the Supreme Court's Dred Scott decision. Lincoln had said he opposed the decision because it did not permit Negroes to enjoy the rights of citizenship. Douglas said he believed the decision was correct. He said it was clear that the government had been made by white men for white men. He said he opposed Negro citizenship. I do not accept the Negro as my equal, Douglas said, and I deny that he is my brother. However, he said, this does not mean I believe that Negroes should be slaves. Negroes should enjoy every possible right that does not threaten the safety of the society in which they live. Every state and territory must decide for itself what these rights will be. Illinois decided that Negroes will not be citizens, but that it will protect their life, property, and civil rights. It keeps from Negroes only political rights and refuses to make Negroes equal to white men. That policy satisfies me, Douglas said, and it satisfies the Democratic Party.
Then Lincoln spoke. First, he denied that the Republican Party was an abolitionist party. "I have no purpose," he said, "either directly or indirectly, to interfere with slavery where it exists. I believe I have no legal right to do so, nor do I wish to do so. I do not," Lincoln said, "wish to propose political and social equality between the white and black races." "But," he went on, "there is no reason in the world why Negroes should not have all the natural rights listed in the Declaration of Independence, the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." "I agree with Judge Douglas," Lincoln said, "that the Negro is not my equal in many ways, certainly not in color, perhaps not mentally or morally. But in the right to eat the bread that his own hand earns, he is my equal and the equal of Judge Douglas and the equal of every living man."
Lincoln then defended his statement that the United States could not continue half slave and half free. He said he did not mean that customs or institutions must be the same in every state. He said it was healthy and necessary for differences to exist in a country so large. He said different customs and institutions helped unite the country, not divide it. But Lincoln questioned if slavery was such an institution. He said slavery had not tied the states of the Union together, but had always been an issue that divided them. How had the country existed half slave and half free for so many years? Lincoln asked. Because, he said, the men who created the government believed that slavery was only temporary. Once people understood that slavery was not permanent, the crisis would pass. Slavery could be left alone in the South until it slowly died. That way, Lincoln said, would be best for both the white and black races.
Stephen Douglas and Abraham Lincoln were campaigning for a Senate seat from the state of Illinois. But their debates had national importance, too. Douglas expected to be the Democratic candidate for president in 1860. His statements could win or lose him support for that contest. Whenever possible, he tried to show that he was a man of the people, like Lincoln. He tried to show that his Democratic Party was a national party, while the Republican Party was a party only of the North. And he tried to show that Lincoln's policies would lead to civil war.
Lincoln, for his part, may have looked like a simple farmer, but he was a very smart lawyer and politician. He asked questions which he knew would cause trouble for Douglas. He wanted to create a split between Douglas and his supporters in the South. Lincoln also wanted to keep alive the debate over slavery. That, he said, is the real issue. That is the issue that will continue in this country when these poor tongues of Judge Douglas and myself are silent. It is the eternal struggle between right and wrong.
In Illinois in 1858, the state legislature chose the men who would represent the state in the National Senate. So Stephen Douglas and Abraham Lincoln had to depend on legislative support to get to Washington. On Election Day, the legislative candidates supporting Lincoln won 4,000 more popular votes than the candidates supporting Douglas. But because of the way election areas had been organized, the Douglas Democrats won a majority of seats. The newly elected legislature chose him to be senator.
Lincoln was sad that he had not won, but he said he was glad to have tried. The campaign, he said, gave me a hearing on the great question of the age, which I could have had in no other way. And though I now sink out of view and shall be forgotten, I believe I have made some marks which will tell for the cause of civil liberty long after I have gone. Many people, however, did not think Abraham Lincoln would be forgotten. His campaign speeches had been published everywhere in the East. His name was becoming widely known. People began to speak of him as a presidential candidate. To win the presidential election of 1860, the Republican Party had decided it needed a man of the people. He must be a good politician and leader. He must be opposed to slavery, but not too extreme. Many people thought Lincoln could be that man.
After the election in Illinois, Lincoln made several speaking trips in the western states. In none of his speeches did he say he might be a candidate for president in 1860. If anyone said anything about Lincoln for president, he would answer that he did not have the ability. Or he would say there were better men in the party than himself. Lincoln said, "Only events can make a president." He would wait for those events.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Frank Oliver and Larry West. Transcripts, MP3s, and podcasts of our programs are online, along with historical images, at voaspecialenglish.com. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.